It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, I'm telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility.
You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Fry Gun.
The Medium Fundamental.
Hey, welcome to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan here in the great state of New Hampshire. Matt is down in San Antonio, Texas, working again this year, doing Spurs TV as the Spurs are back, Celtics are back. First preseason game of the year for the Celtics here on WKXL Monday night, with the Celtics taking on the Charlotte Hornets inside the TD Garden. Red Sox getting set for their playoff matchup with the Houston Astros. We're going to have a lot of Red Sox on the show today. I was inside the clubhouse of the Red Sox celebration on Saturday as they won the division. We'll hear from a number of the players, including interviews with Mookie Betts, Chris Sale, Craig Kimbrell, Drew Pomerantz, as well as Christian Vasquez inside the Red Sox clubhouse. We'll preview the series in depth also. Take a look at the Patriots as well, as they're struggling here to start the 2017 season. But as we welcome Matt in this segment of the program, presented by Revision Energy, what can sunshine do for you? Check out the local solar professionals at revisionenergy.com. It's a day, as we talk on Monday, where, you know, I'm looking to sports. Like, I need sports at this point in time. I wish there was baseball playoffs starting tonight, because we need a diversion from what's going on in the world right now. Or maybe we don't. Maybe we need to not divert ourselves and to focus on what's going on. But there's just a lot of sadness in the world right now with the horrific attack in Las Vegas at a country music festival. You know, music is something that's really important to both Matt and I. And the death of one of the giants of rock and roll, as we understand, with Tom Petty passing away. Not that we understand that he's a legend, but we understand, from what we understand, he has passed away. The information still, as we talk here, is somewhat up in the air as to that's the case. But for what we understand, he's either in dire circumstances or has passed away. And he is without question one of the legends of music. And this is just a really, you know, it's a tough day to get through. The stories that we're hearing from Las Vegas, and, you know, the death of an individual whose music has, you know, enriched the lives of others and influenced so many people through how he engaged in the songwriting process. Matt, welcome to the program.
Wow, Chris, you're right. That's a really sad opening, sad day, you know, not to mention the continued hardships faced from all the hurricanes
right,
that are ongoing as well. It's definitely a lot that kind of gets to you right now at this time. But our thoughts and prayers go out to everyone out there dealing with these hardships and having to go through them. If there's one thing, hopefully, that comes from this, is it can bring people together. It seems like times of adversity in this country bring out the best in people. People put their differences aside, their politics aside, and come together to help each other. So, hopefully that's what happens now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hopeful that, you know, individuals are able to connect with the people that they love and to break down some of the barriers that may exist in, you know, relationships that are out there, and to get over kind of the trivial things and to enjoy life. It was a heartbreaking account of a mother and father who were at the concert, and they called their they thought they're going to die. They were hiding under the bleachers, and they called their 20 and I believe 22-year-old children to tell them they loved them. And that, that they were proud of them, and they hoped they were going to live, you know, a great life. And they were fortunate to survive. There is a hockey coach from UNLV, assistant hockey coach, who was shot, and the bullet came close to his lung. He's going to be in ICU for a long time, but he is expected to survive. Obviously, there, as the count sits as we speak, 58 individuals who lost their lives, and over 500 individuals were hurt. And, you know, the reason that this hits people so hard, obviously, is because of the loss of life, but also the where it took place. I mean, it's at a concert, a place where you relax, disconnect, you don't have your guard up, and, you know, and walking into an NBA arena to play basketball or for me to cover a game, I mean, it's something that you don't think about. You think that you think you're safe. And then, you know, something like this kind of sets off an alarm in your mind that, hey, anything could happen at any time. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it just kind of takes away that sense of security that you have in going out in public. And that's at the heart of this situation.
Yeah, especially when you look at the shooter. It seems like it came with no warning signs, just kind of out of the blue there. Can't figure out what the motive is, what he was thinking. It doesn't make sense, and just kind of contributes to what you talked about, where, you know, anything could happen anywhere. It really strikes at the heart of people's sense of security and safety, especially at large gatherings, whether it's a concert, a sporting event, whatever. But you know, this was, you know, one of those things, I think, where it's a tricky thing in that you can have the best security in the world,
right,
within that concert, but this attack occurred outside those parameters, you know, from way up in that hotel room. So just, you know, something else to think about and look at when you're trying to secure these types of events.
Right, and, you know, whether now with baseball and the playoffs, like, you have to think about buildings surrounding, you know, a facility potentially, and this individual is very far. Not very far, but he was pretty far away from where the concert venue was taking place. But because of the types of guns that he had, he was able to shoot and fairly accurately, or at least, you know, spray shooting from a very long distance. So yeah, it changes that. And, you know, the scary thing that's always existed, and I hope this doesn't send us back to a kind of a post 9/11 mindset, but I remember during that time that you know, whether it was going to baseball playoff games, the World Series that year, saw U2 a couple times in concert. Like, with the anthrax and everything that was going on, there was a feeling that, hey, something could very easily happen tonight, and I'm making a decision that I'm going to go to this event. And perhaps that's always the case. But, you know, we feel safe and have felt safe and secure going to these types of concerts. But now, I mean, this is not the first time this has happened either. There have been several of these attacks that have taken place overseas in Europe. And I think that, you know, the commonality obviously is the gun side of things. But also that if an individual is willing to trade their life for that of others, particularly in our free society, there is only a certain amount that can take place. And, you know, you hope that the individuals who are there to protect you will get there quick enough. But if a person makes a decision to do something, you know, they're and are armed to the way that some of these individuals are, it's a scary situation.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, the only thing that I was thinking about was make it harder for people who are going to make these horrible choices to get their hands on the weapons that are able to do that much destruction. You know, I'm not trying to get in a whole gun control debate on our sports show, but, like, you know, should people just be able to get their hands on weapons that can shoot hundreds of rounds like that from, like you said, a pretty far distance away easily? I think no. You know, why? That's just my opinion, and I think in situations where they get used for the wrong reasons, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, you know, since we have gone here, and we were at the beginning of the show, I was at a crossroads of whether we were going to go too deep into this or kind of divert and stay on the sports thing.
It's hard not to.
But I think it's important that we do. And you know, that's kind of where I always fall on these things, where it's kind of like what Coach Pop said the other day, where a lot of times we avoid having these types of conversations because they're not comfortable. He was referring to the conversations regarding race, and I thought that he was fabulous in the things that he had to say. And that, you know, it's probably not the best place for an NBA coach to use, you know, media day to talk about Donald Trump. But guess what? It was the right thing to do.
To that point, you know, my attitude towards any type of difficult conversation is to be respectful.
Right.
Everybody's opinion, whether you agree with it or not.
Right.
That's the only way to kind of keep an open mind and try to either find common ground or shift how you think about something or how someone else thinks about something. You can't just be like, oh, this person thinks that, you know, they should be fired or they're full of crap, blah, blah, blah. You know, really try to like look at it through their lens and see why they think that and respect why they think that, whether you agree with it or not.
So
I think that's important.
So the Bruins, Celtics, Patriots, Red Sox, and Revolution debuted the Take the Lead initiative, and they had a availability with former players talking about you know, the difficulties that they had encountered in regards to race. And in the and it was, you know, how do we stop racism in sports and so forth. And I thought that, you know, particularly in light of what, you know, took place, no pun intended, with the Patriots and so forth, that Matt Light is a great former Patriot player, great offensive lineman for the team. And he said he felt embarrassed to be a Patriot, essentially, because of the Patriots who took a knee during the national anthem. I thought that in order for a real conversation to take place in regards to race and the flag and all of that, I mean, Matt Light or Kurt Schilling or somebody else who has an opposing viewpoint, you know, should be a part of, you know, these types of conversations. I'm not doubting anything, and I think that the messaging is very important, and all of those, the viewpoints and experiences that those players pushed forth are really important. But in order to move the dialogue, in order to connect with the individuals on the other side, if you just present to them a flow of information from a certain vantage point, then I don't think you connect with the individual. It has to be a conversation.
Well, you're talking about actually in-person communication, but, you know, I've been on Twitter for, I think, 9 months now. And what I've discovered is when you're on social media, and this is probably old news to everybody listening, but I'm new to it, you really read, post, or whatever, like it's through the people that are generally think how you think. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like the people you follow, the publications you follow.
You're in a vacuum.
The outlets you follow are generally like-minded to yourself. Like, that's why you like them. That's why you follow them. So you're just kind of like recycling what you think over and over again, and I think it just contributes to closed-mindedness all around.
I agree. I think it does, and you get kind of motivated by the individuals who are around you. Like, you have a certain point, and you feel that you know, that point is valid, but you're kind of waiting to see how everybody else reacts too. And then if there's like, it seems like there's a you know, consensus, bam, you pile on. And I think that comes from all different viewpoints. On the gun control thing for a second, I mean, this is a topic that isn't, in my view, easy. And it's one of those topics where there are people who are very passionate on both sides. And this is not one of the political issues that I find myself incredibly passionate about on one side or the other. I'm very pragmatic, you know, in regards to this issue, because I feel like something does need to take place. And I feel like we have a problem with guns in this country. And I feel like that individuals should not be able to purchase these assault weapons. But I also see the other side, where if you don't allow the law-abiding citizen to purchase assault weapons, and then you only have individuals who are able to obtain them illegally and are using them for nefarious purposes, you know, there has to be a massive program to initiate the take-back of these types of guns that would correlate with any sort of gun control and not allowing for you know, law-abiding citizens to purchase them. I am open to, you know, the banning of assault weapons. I think that that's a good place to start. There doesn't need to be any sort of a trade-off. I mean, there's been discussion of what should take place with AK-47s and so forth, which this individual used. He had no criminal record except for some traffic violations. So this is your prototypical law-abiding citizen who was able to purchase the weapons. There was no red flags of any sort. And for whatever reason, he obviously had some sort of a mental issue, which led to this. And, you know, this has taken place. But, you know, any sort of, from a law-abiding citizen's perspective, who here in New Hampshire who may have guns, you have to assure them that you're going after the criminals who have the guns as hard as harder than you're going after the individual who's the law-abiding citizen who wants to be able to purchase guns.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's multiple ways to improve the situation with the gun control laws. But like you said, it's such a hot-button issue. It seems like everybody shies away from it. Nothing ever gets done. And then we have another mass shooting, and everybody talks about it, and then nothing gets done. At what point do we break the cycle?
There has to be, on the case with so many issues, there has to be a pragmatic middle. There has to be somebody who brings folks together in order to solve this issue. I mean, you have individuals who are very, very pro-gun control. They get labeled as people who want to take away the guns. You have people on the other side who want to have as many guns as possible. And gun sales go up and go through the roof. Stocks are already going up because individuals want to protect themselves. And there is the other argument that is often made where, you know, if there was more people with guns in the crowd, then, you know, perhaps they were able to take this individual out. Now, he was at the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay, well, far away from everybody.
I mean, you would have had to have a sniper rifle.
Right. But in other circumstances of this nature, that's the argument that comes about. It is an area where there needs to be compromise, where individuals on both sides need to move towards the middle to get something done, because we can't continue to have individuals dying on our streets. And there needs to be, at a minimum, in my view, a reaffirmation of an assault weapons ban. And then you work from there, because I think another big piece needs to be an investment in law enforcement to stop the illegal sale of guns and to make key efforts there as well, so that you can show the law-abiding citizen that, hey, we're just not punishing you, but we're gonna take back illegal guns as well. It's not an easy topic, and most of them aren't.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I have friends who are super pro-gun. Whether they're ex-military hunters, whatever.
Sure.
And, you know, they're really good with guns, you know, like they have been trained in them. They're responsible people. So for them, you know, they take it personal. Like, oh, you're going to take away my right to have these guns. But at some point, like you said, you got to kind of sacrifice for the greater good. You know, it's not about you. It's about everybody. The highest and the lowest common denominator, and how you can, what's best for everybody in general. You know, it might not be exactly what's best for you, but at some point, something's got to be done for the greater good, I think.
All right, this is The Life of Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. In the middle and last segment of the program, we'll go heavy into the Red Sox. I've been talking a lot about Las Vegas and also Tom Petty, who I've seen so many times in concert, and just an incredible singer-songwriter. The way that he wrote songs, particularly his songs that delve into romance and such, are just fabulous. And I will always remember during the 9/11 tribute concert when he sang "I Won't Back Down," and it was, you know, a moment in time where we were all kind of leery of what was going to happen, and Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, and it was like he was singing that song to Osama bin Laden. He had a snarl, a growl, and he was so pronounced in how he sang it. And to me, you know, that's something I'll always forget. And after every song, he would like ham it up in concert, be like, "Thank you very much," and he'd do like a little bow. And those are the things that those are the things that I'll remember about Tom Petty.
I only saw Tom Petty one time. I got to see him at the Toyota Center in Houston 3 years ago. Great show. Obviously, lifelong fan. It was one of those bands my parents always had playing in the car and in the house when I was growing up. And they're based out of Gainesville, Florida. I think his guitar player would often play with a Gatorhead guitar. So he's one of those universal musicians that everybody liked. It didn't matter what kind of music you like, you were a Petty fan. It's really sad to see him go.
All right, we'll play Wildflowers here, taking us into the break for Tom and also for victims in Las Vegas as well. Matt, it's always good to talk to you. We'll go inside the Red Sox clubhouse after this. You're listening to Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show brought to you by Revision Energy and revisionenergy.com.
You belong among the wildflowers. Sail away, kill off the hours. You belong somewhere, you feel free. Run away, find you a lover. Go away, somewhere all bright.
Welcome back here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the program is presented by Douglas Leonard and Garvey and NHLawOffice.com. If you've been injured, the most important decision that you're going to make is who is the lawyer that's going to represent you. Check out NHLawOffice.com. So we go inside the Red Sox clubhouse right now. Red Sox back-to-back American League East champions. Things are a little more difficult than they had hoped for in clinching that division title, but they did so on Saturday with a great win against the Houston Astros, the team that they will now meet in the division series. Game 1 is on Thursday at 4 p.m. in Houston. Games 3 and 4 in Boston Sunday and Monday. Here is Mookie Betts, who hit a big home run for the Red Sox to help cement their victory 6-3 over the Astros to put them into the playoffs, back-to-back AL East champions.
Mookie, after a long season, how sweet is it to celebrate with the guys, all the work you guys put in to get to this point?
You know, it's great. You know, anytime you can pop champagne, you know, you've done something well. And, you know, I wouldn't change this group of guys. You know, I think this just kind of shows, you know, what kind of group we got here.
And this is the reason you play the game, is to win, to celebrate and to have fun. And this is kind of like the blowing off steam from a great year.
Yeah. Woo! Yeah, I completely agree. You know, it's been a great year. A lot of adversity we faced. But it kind of shows that we are a resilient team, and we just bounce back and with every I don't even know what I'm trying to say, but we just bounce back when things get tough.
How fun is the postseason going to be, too? Because the opportunity is there, obviously, to start things over again and to begin a year with a group that is, I think, much better positioned this year than last year with how you guys have won games down the stretch this year in extra innings and really grinding late.
Yeah, I think it's just we know we've been in every position that really we can say throughout the season, so postseason shouldn't be anything new. It's just going to be us continuing to play our game.
Here's Red Sox All-Star closer Craig Kimbrel.
We knew we played good ball all season long, and you know, for it to come down to winning a game like today, you know, we wish we would have done it a little earlier, but you know, we did it, and that's all that really matters.
How much have you enjoyed pitching for this group?
It's been great. It's been great. I mean, I pitch for my team. I pitch for what everybody does on the field and what we do to get the lead for me to come in. And it's been a fun experience this year. You know, getting to pitch in new situations and getting to hold games so we have a chance to come back. It's been great. It's been we're a team from 1 to 25, and every guy is going to contribute down the bullpen to on the bits, and it's great to be able to celebrate right now.
That seems to be one of the biggest keys, how much you guys enjoy each other, 1 through 25. You know, sometimes you see pitchers and position players go in different directions, but this group, everybody plays for each other.
Well, I mean, that's the definition of a team.
Woo!
A team's only as good as the weakest link, and if you're not there to put your hand out and help him up at the time that he needs it, he's going to do the same thing for you when you need it, and that's what makes a team, and we have a lot of those guys in here.
We've seen over the last couple of years how important the bullpen is in the postseason. This bullpen, I think, is the best in baseball, particularly with David Price's addition. How much dividends do you think that's going to pay off moving forward?
It's going to be huge. Having a guy like David down there, whatever situation it is, for him come in and shut the door, he did it today, and we saw the excitement it brought to the team and the fans, and he's going to be a big piece for us down the stretch.
For you personally, what has this season meant? The way you've pitched, the consistency for which you've approached things, the command, the control you've had throughout the course of the year?
I just stuck with trusting what I have and not trying to do too much and simplify the game, and sometimes that's all you need to do, and it worked out this year.
Thanks, Craig.
Thank you.
Craig.
All right, Craig Kimbrel right there. Chris Sale will get the ball for the Red Sox in game one.
Thank you. What does it mean to you to be as big a part as you've been in bringing this team to this point?
Well, I mean, it takes 25 guys. I know that for sure. And a coaching staff. I mean, this is as much fun for as everybody here. I mean, we've battled. This is a battle-tested team. I mean, we've grinded, we've worked hard. I mean, can't really put into words how special this moment is.
The division title is so special, too, because it starts, obviously, in spring training. You work day in, day out, and play 162 games to get to this point, and that's so special to do it with this group, too. That's so close.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've known it all along. I mean, we showed it in spring training, knew what we had to do, but also knew what we could do. And I think, you know, there's a difference between talking about it and actually doing it, and we did it. And, you know, it's a special moment. You know, everybody in here grinded. You know, there's ups and downs through the year, but, you know, every single guy in here grinded, coaching staff included. Everybody a part of this organization grinded the whole year. And that's what makes this moment even more special.
Each player, when they come into a new location, they kind of wonder what the environment's going to be like and what the season is going to be like. For you, how is the expectation of coming into Boston matched, you know, the reality of being here and winning here?
I mean, I try not to put too much emphasis on it. You know, I always just try to go out there and do what I've always done. But like I said, I mean, being here in this moment, nothing like it.
These guys as well, I mean, you've been on other teams before. It seems to be a camaraderie amongst this group that's different than other teams. I mean, the pitchers, the relief pitchers, everybody is together as one. They get along. They're fun.
Yeah, I mean, you have to. I mean, to get to this point, to achieve this goal, you have to. I mean, there can't be any question. There can't be any division. There can't be segregation. We have to be one as a group. And we found a way to do that. I mean, you're talking about, you know, 25 guys, coaching staff from all over the world, different parts of the country, from different parts of the entire world, coming together for one goal, fighting for the same goal. And, you know, I think that starts from the top. I mean, our management and all the way down, we found a way to get the guys to buy into the same thing and fight for one purpose.
I think a baseball clubhouse is like the greatest thing in the world because it shows – that people from different backgrounds, just like you're talking about, it's a great melting pot. 100%. They come together and everybody, you know, sees that everyone is the same and everybody has the same goals.
No doubt. I mean, we have guys in here speaking five different languages, and from, like you said, from all over the world. And to be able to come together as a group for one reason, for one common goal, for the greater good of us, and to fight for a championship, it's a beautiful thing.
Final thing, how much are you looking forward to your first shot at the postseason?
I can't wait.
All right, that is Chris Sale right there. Xander Bogaerts has been hot as of late. He's been really good in the leadoff spot for the Boston Red Sox, also playing great out in the field. Xander Bogaerts heads back to the postseason. This will be his third postseason with the Boston Red Sox.
Bogey, this is hopefully the first of four celebrations, but this is always a really special one because of the fact that it's a long grind and process to get here.
This was one of the most emotional win to win the division for me in my years that I've been here. To win it on game 161, all that we've been through, all that I've been through as a personally and also as a team, ups and downs. Other teams heating up at the right moment and we stay with them. I mean, it was very special this year.
And it's just how you did it too. Like, you guys came out and you got a win today. You grinded, you got a great pitching performance. Yeah.
We grinded all these games. We had four games missing. I think we had to win only two. You know, we couldn't even win one. Missing two more games, we only missed one win and we got it, you know. It wasn't easy. This was probably one of the best games we've played all year.
How do you feel going into the postseason, yourself and team-wise? It feels like you are looking like Bogey again. You're taking the inside pitch today and that double down the line. Yeah. You pulled it.
I mean, my hand was one of the biggest things, and now it's feeling good. So I can react to those inside pitches. As a team, if we play like today, we play as a team, we play as one, we can definitely make it pretty far.
How do you feel about the Astros overall? Obviously, that's a really good team over there, but you can see little things here and there where this team can have success.
They're much like us last year, especially offensively. They're a lot like us. They're a lot of guys breaking, you know. This year, we're a bit different, but we're getting the job done. We're number one in our division, so that means we're really good. We got to understand that. We got to believe in that also, and anything can happen. You know, if you play like today, it's going to be hard to beat the Boston Red Sox.
Was there any doubt, you know, over the last couple of days that this celebration would happen in your mind?
It was tough. It was tough to for us not to come through. But anything can happen in baseball. The Yankees could have either lost or we could have won. So it was kind of a win-win situation. We lost the first two games against this guy, you know, and here's a bit more like we need to win now. But I'm happy we did it in the end, and we got on top.
Finally, what spurred this team today? Was it Pomerantz? Was it, you know, finally breaking through with a couple runs after the walks?
Drew Pomerantz.
Yeah.
He threw five shutout innings until we got a run.
Right.
I believe that our pitchers do good when we get a run first.
Yeah.
Especially guys like Doug Fister or Porcello. Those guys, they calm as we score first. So they're probably one of the biggest things we got to do to try to. It's hard to score in this game, but if we score first, we can have a bigger chance.
One of the best guys in baseball, Bogey. Congrats, celebrate.
Thank you.
All right, Xander Bogaerts right there. Drew Pomerantz, what an incredible year he had for the Red Sox. 17-6, an ERA of 3.32. And he really pitched the Red Sox, as Xander mentioned, into the postseason.
I was talking to Bogey, and he said you were the reason they won the division today. Your starting pitching performance is what put this team over the top. What does that mean to you to pitch this team to the division here today?
It feels great. You know, we came into today knowing that we needed to win. You know, we needed to win one more game, and you know, I was anxious to get out there, and even with the rain and everything, and I was hoping for, you know, a normal start time and go out there and, you know, get it done today.
What was your mindset going in to this game?
Pretty normal. You know, I tried to keep everything simple. I try not to worry about the Yankees or, you know, any other thing other than just going out there and doing my job and making pitches.
People wondered, you know, how is Pomerantz, how's Sale going to react in postseason starts? But this was pretty much a postseason start, right?
Yeah, this whole series has definitely felt like the postseason. You know, it definitely has had, you know, it's a postseason atmosphere all around.
It's been amazing to see your consistency through the course of this year. And, you know, even today when you should have probably had a shutout, it comes certain again where it's six innings and one run allowed pretty much every single game, it seems like that for you. How have you done it? I came into this year knowing what I needed to do to be successful, you know, to pitch in this division. You know, it's a lot different, especially pitching here at home at Fenway Park. And I feel like I did a really good job of, you know, I worked on it in the off season. It kind of ran into my first few starts, and I struggled a little bit. But, you know, once I nailed it down, I just, you know, I tried to run with it.
How much confidence does a start like this give you going into the postseason, or does it change anything? You knew what you had to do, and you were going to do it.
You know, you take it one game, one pitch at a time. You know, we won this one, but, you know, it's, you know, nothing's a given. So I got to figure out a way to beat them again next week.
Congrats, Drew.
Thank you.
That's Drew Pomeranz. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show presented by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. If you've been injured, the most important decision you will make is getting the right lawyer. Check out nhlawoffice.com. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. When we return, conversations with Andrew Benintendi and Eduardo Nunez, who's looking to make a return for the postseason. We'll also check in with Astros stars George Springer and Carlos Correa. Welcome back. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show brought to you by the Concord Youth Hockey Association. Best time to start up and play hockey? Age 4. Check out ConcordYouthHockey.org and get your child started with Learn to Skate. More Red Sox now as we head back down to Fenway Park for conversations with Andrew Benintendi and Eduardo Nunez to take a look at the Astros side of things as well, as Red Sox have a big challenge ahead of them in the division series if they want to get to the ALCS. Red Sox, of course, division champions, the American League East, for the second consecutive season. Andrew Benintendi has completed his first full regular season as a big leaguer, and I talked with him about that.
I'm wondering if you could kind of, you know, evaluate this season for your first full season in the big league. Some of the things you've learned, you know, about yourself, and obviously there's still more baseball to be played, but just kind of curious as to what you've found here this first year.
I think I just realized how long of a season it is, and you're going to go through your ups and downs, and you just got to kind of take them in stride. And I mean, I don't know how many at-bats you get, but I feel like 600, 700 at-bats, it's a lot of stuff's going to happen. So I'm just got to kind of just try to stay as consistent as you can.
Yeah, that seems to be the thing where, you know, it's kind of year after year, the baseball card ends up being the baseball card at the end of the year, and you kind of project where you think you're going to be, and you end up there despite, you know, the lows and so forth. It's kind of an ebb and a flow into the season. And when you look at things statistically, do you feel like this is, you know, where you expected to be for your rookie year? In a normal year, you'd probably be rookie of the year. Is this where you expected to be numbers-wise?
I don't know. I think I'm a better hitter than what I've shown this year. I've gone through a lot of streaks where I'm just inconsistent and not hitting well, and I think I've been striking out, you know, too much for, I think, the kind of hitter I can be. So, but it's my first year. I've faced a lot of pitchers, so I'll know what to expect next time around. So, I'm trying to take it all in, learn as much as I can.
Like, it seems outwardly that you're very consistent in regards to, you know, your temperament and your approach and your dedication. Like, you have the same routine and so forth. So where do you change things in regards to the, like, where do you think you could be more consistent in terms of how you approach having success?
Just not giving at-bats away, I think. I think a lot of times when I'm struggling, I'll start to swing at pitches I usually wouldn't, right, and try to get a hit rather than just letting them come. So just, I think next year, that's what I'm going to try to do more of, is not get myself out and just swing at the pitches that I know I can hit.
Postseason-wise, obviously, you know, everything changes here where each at-bat means so much, and a couple of big hits here and there and a view of a season can change. How do you feel like this team is set to kind of maximize each individual's potential? Because during the course of the year, perhaps everybody's numbers aren't where they'd expect them to be, but the key statistics for runs batted in, runs, hitting with runners in scoring position, those are all really good amongst just about all you guys, which would, you know, lead one to believe that you guys are ready to maximize this opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, the postseason, it's like a whole nother, it's the start of a new season pretty much. I mean, what you do in the regular season doesn't matter. So, and then also I feel like no one cares if you go 0-for-10, but if you're driving in runs, right, moving runners, those things come – become not more important, but it's seen more important. So I don't know. I think the little things come out, and from the three games I think last year that we played. So just taking each at bat and try to do your job.
That is Andrew Benintendi. Good news on Eduardo Nunez. It looks like he is going to be cleared and ready to go for the postseason. He was such a valuable player for the Red Sox before injuring his knee and having to sit out the last couple weeks. Talked with Nuni about his preparations for the postseason.
Eduardo Nunez has been one of the most important players for the Red Sox over the last couple months, injured as of late. But from what I understand, you're making some good progress, and you're hopefully going to be back for the playoffs.
Yeah. This, we keep positive. We try to do everything we can to put me in the field in the playoff. My knee respond really well. Today was the best day I was feeling during the process, and I think we really excited how my knee respond, and we looking forward.
When you had the situation in the batter's box where your knee kind of gave out, what was the initial things that came through your mind? Did you think that was it at that point? Obviously, a lot of fans, you know, saw you coming back in that first game and saw that what looked like a visible setback, and were concerned.
Yeah. We always really scared. Was really painful. My knee was really not ready for that yet, and that's why we tried to sit back a couple more days. And we happy how my knee respond after that sit back.
Do you think you're ready to play, you know, pretty much any position out there, or are there certain positions that that you think will require less in terms of putting your knee through stuff?
That's why we do sit back and want to make sure I maybe not play this weekend to make sure I can play everywhere like I normally do and try to be full healthy for the playoff. That's the more important thing right now for me and my team. And that's what we're looking for.
So you think, regardless of what type of setbacks there may be, or how you progress here, pinch hitting is going to be something that you're going to be active for the postseason, in your view?
I hope yes. And I might be full healthy and might be play available in every position again.
How difficult has, you know, this been for you? In you've had such an incredible start for this team. You're carrying this team for months, and to have this type of a setback, has it been difficult for you to remain patient and to be able to, you know, come to the ballpark and do your work aside and hope to be able to contribute down the road?
Yeah, it's difficult. It's tough. You just have to watch and see how this guy work so hard, try to put everything together. You know, I try to be simple. Try to get myself first, and then try to get the team. And you know, God have the control. I play hard. That's what I like to do. It's my game. And sometimes you don't have to worry about injury. Things just happen.
Final thing, what type of feel do you get for this team going into the postseason? I think it's going to be obviously an underdog role for this team going against, you know, the Astros, the Indians down the line. But it seems like that might be a good role for this team. There's not going to be a lot of pressure, and I think this team could surprise some people.
For sure. We have the perfect talent, perfect other group, so we can win the World Series. I think Cleveland is a really good team, Houston too, but we are. We have a great pitcher, great hitting, great different players, great reliever. I think we have energy.
Eduardo, thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys.
So to close out the program here, a conversation with Carlos Correa, who gives us some insight into the Houston Astros. Next week on the program, we'll hear from another one of the best players in baseball, Connecticut's own George Springer, the Astros center fielder, and of course have a complete wrap-up of and up get you up to date on what's going on with the series between the Red Sox and the Astros. Here is Carlos Correa.
Joined by Carlos Correa, shortstop for the Houston Astros. And one of the best parts about this team is how good this lineup is and the type of ways that you guys can win games. How do you think that's going to benefit you guys in the postseason?
You know, we've been having a great year, and the good thing about our lineup is it's been consistent the whole year long. And, you know, going into the playoffs right now with a lot of confidence, knowing that we're all feeling good, healthy, and, you know, feeling good with our timing at the plate. And I think the last three games have been like a good start going into the playoffs.
The Red Sox guys always talked about how Ortiz would take pressure off of everybody in the lineup. For you playing with Altuve and Springer, and we could go on down the line, how much does that allow you to kind of be you?
You know, it's you know, those guys around you make you better. You know, when you have so many great players in the team, you know, you don't have to put the team on your shoulders. You know, anybody can contribute, and you know, it seems like every single night, there's a different hero in each game, you know, all the way to, you know, like you said, Altuve, Springer, but Marwin, Julie, you know, McCann, Beltran, all those guys that can hit, and, you know, are a big part of our team and our lineup.
How would you describe your relationship with Jose Altuve? What is the chemistry? What is the dynamic that exists for you guys?
We're like brothers, you know. We share the field. Away from the field, we go eat all the time, and we spend a lot of time. We play FIFA together, you know. We do a lot of things together. He's like my older brother.
One of the awesome things about the postseason this year is there's going to be in the American League four great shortstops: you, Bogey, Didi Gregorius, and also obviously Francisco Lindor in Cleveland. Is there anything special about, you know, that group in your view? Because it seems like that's kind of the future of the game, right? They have four really great players who are at the forefront of each team.
We're all young. We are hungry. We want to do what's best for our team, and we all want to win a ring. So this playoffs, we get to share the field and, you know, help our teams reach that goal.
Final thing, Rafi Devers, 20 years old, coming into the league, same age as you. What have you learned, and what would you kind of pass along to him about how you go about becoming better each year?
Just you know, for him to take the pressure off his shoulders in the playoffs, all I can tell him is to go out there and play like every single day. You know, it's just another game, with just maybe with more fans and a little louder, but at the end of the day, our games that matter, but at the end of the day, you gotta do what you can to contribute for the team. And, you know, he's been great this year. He's been hitting in the clutch, he's been hitting for power, and I think he's gonna be a great player in this league. So you just gotta take care of business and go out there and play like it's just another game.
Sweet, thanks, Carlos.
Thank you.
That is Astros star shortstop Carlos Correa. You've been listening to Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show brought to you by the Concord Youth Hockey Association.
Not even close to all right.